And when I got to London, I kind of felt like I ought to find a church to go to. And I happened to be walking past a little church in the middle of London, actually Westminster Baptist Church, not very far from Westminster Chapel, but Westminster Baptist Church, just a very small church, small congregation. And as I was walking past, it was kind of like somebody grabbed me by the scruff of the neck and turned me around and shoved me inside the church. And it happened to be Bible study evening, and I went and joined the Bible study, and the pastor was leading a series on Romans. And you can imagine it didn't take me very long. You know, within the first two or three weeks I was there, I came to understand the gospel message and believed in Christ. And from that moment on, I actually felt that God was calling me into a Christian service. In fact, I'd already preached a number of sermons before I came to know the Lord. I'm sure those sermons were fairly rubbish sermons. But nevertheless, as soon as God came into my life and I knew the reality of the gospel message, then you know I had the desire to be involved in taking that message to others who needed to hear. Just a couple of years that I met my wife, Celia. We were both working in London. She was training at Westminster Hospital at the time. Met her in November, and we got married the following March. That was largely due to her family. We went and talked to her father and said, well, we were willing to wait a couple of years, you know, and before we got married. And he said, why? He said, you're both paying rent and separate accommodation. If you got married, you'd only be paying one load of rent. So it doesn't make sense to wait 2 years. And which was not the reaction that either of us were expecting, really. But nevertheless, we were married the following March. And again, both of us together felt that God was calling us into full-time service. About 5 years into our marriage, we were involved in church activities. We were supporting a couple overseas who are working with Wycliffe Bible translators. And we were both reading through a series of devotional messages called My Utmost for His Highest, about the life of Abraham. And I felt that God wanted me to leave my job, you know, go into training, Bible college, and I wasn't sure at that point exactly what was in store for us. But felt that God wanted us to go into full-time service. And I wasn't quite sure how I was going to tell Celia. You know, I didn't quite know how she'd react. So eventually I plucked up courage, and she said, God's been telling me exactly the same thing, and I was worried about how I was going to tell you. So that was great confirmation that God was speaking to both of us at the same time. So I not long after that, gave in my notice at work, and we went to Bible College at Berwick-on-Tweed, to which then was Lebanon Bible College, and applied to join Wycliffe. And we were accepted by Wycliffe, and we went out to Mexico for our first assignment in 1976. And we were assigned to a language group in Mexico, up in the mountains, Mexican Indian community, Mazatec language, in a town called San Jeronimo Mazatec. And we began learning the language, analyzing, preparing an alphabet, preparing some basic literacy materials, just got to the point where we were ready to start some tentative translation, and got to the point of translating two or three of Jesus' parables into the local language. And our daughter became ill at that point with rheumatic fever. We had to come home to England and to get her medical treatment, and we were taking furlough at the same time. While we were home, the Mexican government decided they were not going to renew any visas anymore for Wycliffe personnel, so we never got back. And at that point, it was quite devastating in a way. We thought we were going to spend our career with Wycliffe in Mexico working on that translation project. And after only 4 years, we found we couldn't continue because we couldn't get visas to get back in. We didn't know what was going to happen. What was going to happen with the San Jeronimo project? What did God have in store for us in the future? But amazingly, what I've got here now, just dedicated last summer, is the New Testament in San Jeronimo Mazatec. The project was taken over after a few years by an American couple, Dan and Peggy Agee. It was no problem for them to travel in and out of Mexico to continue the project. And they took over where we left off. And it's taken 35 years from when we started, but as of last summer, they now have the New Testament. And I'll be referring back to this and the message a little bit later on. But one of the things I want to try and impress on you all this morning is that God's plans are never short-term plans. God's plans for our lives and for the work that we're involved in is always a lot longer term, I think, than we're prepared to accept many times. We're in a culture, society nowadays, where everybody wants instant results. And that even infiltrates the mission community. We had some wonderful colleagues over the last few years who worked in a sensitive situation with a very difficult language group, not with Wycliffe, I hasten to say, with an American mission organization. I won't say which one because I don't want to embarrass them. But they'd been told, if you haven't planted a church in 2 years, we're sending you somewhere else. And we thought, how short-sighted can you get? Expecting somebody to go into a sensitive situation, into a language which is totally unreached, and to have planted a church in 2 years. And if you failed, we'll move you somewhere else. That very much reflects, I think, our culture today. Thinking short term. God's plans are never short term. God has long term plans for our lives. We've been involved in all kinds of different roles, different situations since we left Mexico. And I'll be sharing more about those this morning and this evening. And we would have been amazed at the things that God was going to lead us into over the rest of our Wycliffe career. God has plans for us that are far greater than we can ever imagine or think. And we need to be committed in our own hearts and minds that God is faithful and God will complete the work that he's prepared for us to do. And he'll complete his work in our lives too and make us into the kind of people that he wants to honor his name and to magnify his gospel and his word throughout the world. So I look forward to sharing a little more of that with you in just a little while. Political problems going on somewhere in the Middle East, Central Asia. Thailand's been having problems, political problems. They've just reached a solution, it seems, in Philippines between the Christian and Muslim communities in the Philippines. But there is political instability across the whole of that area. Of course, those countries are mostly strongly Muslim, Hindu, or Buddhist. So you're working against very strong religious
opposition. And in many of those countries, there are religious extremist movements who are very much opposed to the spread of the gospel. National co-workers can be at very high risk. So you can't do the translation without mother tongue speakers to come alongside you, work with you as part of a team. But in many of these countries, that places very high risks on those national co-workers. And you need very creative, different kinds of distribution strategies. And I'll be talking much more about that this evening. How do we get the Bible into the hands of these people? We were actually running a workshop in an African country a few years or so now. And we had about six or seven young people coming along to that workshop who were Muslim converts, believers from Muslim background. Most of them had not been believers very long. But in the middle of that workshop, one of those young men basically disappeared. And we found out from his friends what had happened is that his father had found his Bible under his mattress. And his father basically had beaten him up, thrown him out of the house, and he had to basically disappear. And he said, actually, he was amazingly positive. He said, my father could have killed me, but he didn't. I'm still alive. And I'm thankful that God saved my life and has kept me so that I can continue to grow as a believer and to share my faith with others. But he'd basically lost his family, lost his home. And whether he would ever be able to come back again, you know, is a big question. Those are the kind of risks that believers face in these kind of situations. So for many reasons, it's not easy. But God does have plans. And we just need to recognize that in some cases, those plans have to be very long term. After we came home from Mexico, we were given the responsibility for developing translation work in what we refer to in general terms as the Mediterranean area. We lived in the south of Spain. Actually, we lived in Gibraltar for a couple of years, and then at the time the border was closed between Gibraltar and Spain. The only way you could get to Gibraltar overland was to take a ferry from Algeciras across to Tangiers and then another ferry from Tangiers back to Gibraltar, which was an awful hassle, you know, when you're only actually traveling about 2 or 3 miles and it takes 2 days and two ferries, basically, to get from one place to the other. But when the border opened, we moved into Spain, traveled a lot across on the southern side of the Mediterranean. But one of the first people we met when we were there was an elderly lady called Miss Swan. She's not somebody that many people have ever heard of, but she had gone down to North Africa when she was in her 20s, actually in the middle of the Second World War. She'd worked in the country for 40 years, most of her adult life. She'd spent 25 of those years translating John's Gospel into one of the local languages. And during the whole of that time, 40 years of her life, she'd invested in that particular project. She'd seen one believer. The man that worked with her and helped her translate John's Gospel became a believer, but he was the only one. And you might think, is it really worth it? You know, is it worth investing 40 years of your life and see one believer? Now, in God's terms, every believer, you know, is a joy to him. Even, you know, just one person coming to know the Lord is worth it. But on the other hand, I think at times she must have been very frustrated and maybe disillusioned and wondering, what's happening? Why isn't God working in this situation? Well, let's look at that story about Jeremiah. Jeremiah was asked to do something which would have seemed strange, even crazy, to most other people at the time. Jerusalem was under siege by the Babylonians. Jeremiah knew that the Babylonians were going to defeat the people of Jerusalem, destroy the city, and that the people of Israel were going to be carried off into Babylon. And he knew they were going to be there in exile for 70 years. God had already told him what was going to happen. And yet, God says to him, I want you to buy this field. Buy a field. Spend 17 shekels of silver. That's a lot of money. Invest that money in buying property. Jeremiah is never going to see the benefit of that investment. In 70 years' time, Jeremiah is going to be dead. I mean, I don't know how old he was at this point in time, but he's certainly not still going to be alive in 70 years when God brings the exiles back from Babylon. He's never, ever going to see any return himself for that investment. But he does have the opportunity to pass on the deeds to his children and grandchildren. His generation will not benefit, but the generations in the future that return from Babylon will. And that reading finishes with Jeremiah saying, for this is what the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of Israel, says, someday people will again own property here in this land, and they will buy and sell houses and vineyards and fields. Jeremiah is looking forward really long term. It's an object lesson in our trust and belief in the faithfulness of God. F for faithful for the children's talk really fits in so well. You know, I couldn't have planned it any better. God is faithful and God will do what he says, but we may have to trust for a long time before we see God's purposes being fulfilled. God did bring the people back from Babylon. They did return to buy and sell and plant their vineyards and settle again in the land. But actually, God had other plans for those 70 years in Babylon that Jeremiah had no idea about, and that really didn't come to fruition for hundreds of years. Let's just mention some of those things briefly. It was during that Babylon exile that the whole synagogue worship system developed. And when Jesus lived in Israel, you know, the synagogue was the place where Jesus went to preach. When Paul began traveling around the Jewish diaspora, it was to the synagogue that he went first. The synagogue system played an essential role in Jesus' own teaching and in the spread of the gospel in the early church. Not all of those Jews who worshipped in the synagogue became believers. Many of them didn't and opposed the gospel. But at the same time, many did. And in those synagogues where there was a significant number of Jewish believers, those Jewish believers formed the core of the Christian community. The synagogue worship brought back a focus on the importance of the Old Testament scripture. The Old Testament scriptures had been largely neglected during the time of the divided kingdoms. But the synagogue worship brought back the reading of the gospel as an essential part of the Jewish worship. When Jesus preached in the synagogue at Nazareth, he was given the scroll of the prophet Isaiah. The spoken language of the people of Israel changed during those 70 years. Instead of
speaking Hebrew as their language of communication, they changed and adopted the Aramaic language, the language of the Babylonian Empire. And there's great purpose in that too, because Hebrew was really only spoken by the Jews themselves. Nobody else outside Israel understood Hebrew. But Aramaic was spoken throughout the whole of the Babylonian Empire, throughout the Middle East, and what came to be Asia Minor. And the only words that we have quoted verbatim that Jesus actually spoke are in Aramaic. Talitha kumi, little girl, arise. Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, my God, why have you forsaken me? Those words are Aramaic, not Hebrew. Jesus taught in Aramaic. He relied on the Hebrew scriptures for his knowledge of God, for his inspiration, but Aramaic was the language which he spoke and which he used to teach. And also, one of the things that is so important in the spread of the gospel is that whole Jewish diaspora, the fact that the Jews were spread out in the whole of that civilized world of the day. Jesus was, God was preparing several hundred years ahead, beginning to prepare the setting, the geography, the culture, and especially the part that the Jewish diaspora would play in the coming of Jesus and the spread of the gospel. And nobody in Jeremiah's day would even have imagined that those things would happen and how important they would become. So God's plans can be, you know, very difficult to fathom for us when we're in the time that we are. How is God going to use these things in the future? Let's come back to talking about Miss Swan and the country in which she was working. In fact, we traveled around that particular country in the 1980s, and I think we met pretty well every believer in the country. There may be about a dozen believers that, as far as we knew, those that was the complete church in that country was about a dozen believers. All of them had spent time in prison for their faith. All of them had suffered a considerable amount of persecution, but they persevered and continued to present a faithful witness and to share the gospel. One of our tasks while we were there was to ensure that there were teams allocated to each of the language groups in that country to begin translation work. And one of those teams took over the translation project that Miss Swan had been working on. Her national co-worker began working with the Wycliffe team, continuing that translation work. After a few years, actually, sadly, he died of cancer. But his wife by then had become a believer. His wife carried on working on the translation project, and a few other local people became believers and formed a translation team, and that work grew. Today, amazingly, there's not just a few believers, but there are thousands, tens of thousands of believers. We're told, actually, that every town of any size at all has at least one, if not more, groups of believers, mostly meeting very low-key because it's still officially illegal to change a religion. But nevertheless, the work has grown tremendously in the past 25, 30 years. And Miss Swan, in fact, never saw that. When she died in the beginning of the 1990s, we still only knew of just a few believers. She never saw in her own lifetime the results that her investment over those 40 years was going to produce. And yet she continued believing that God had a plan and that God was going to bless that work. And God has been faithful in an amazing way. That what it was, I think, even more amazing is that there is actually now a national Bible translation organization. It's no longer Wycliffe that's responsible for the work. The national believers have taken over the responsibility. And they themselves are working in each of the minority groups in that language, not just translating the New Testament, but with the aim of translating the whole Bible into each of those languages. Again, translating the whole Bible is going to take them a long time, but they're determined. They're going to stick at it until the work is complete. I was reminded as I was thinking about this of Hebrews 11. Now, the author talks about all the heroes of faith in the Old Testament. He talks about Abel and Enoch and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and others. And Hebrews 11:13 says that all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things that were promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. And they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. And I think Miss Swan fits exactly into that pattern. You know, she was still living by faith when she died. She never saw the results in her lifetime. She never received the things that God had promised. But she saw them and welcomed them from a distance because she believed that God would reward the work that she had done. And he did. And I'm sure she's rejoicing in heaven now, you know, at the things that have happened since she passed away. So people who say such things show that they're looking for a country of their own. If they'd been thinking of the country they'd left, they would have had the opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he's prepared for them a city. God's plans for us, as I say, don't stop in this world. God's plans for us extend into eternity. And when we get to heaven, I'm sure we'll all be amazed at the other people that are there with us because we have invested our time and our effort in serving God and being faithful witnesses for him. We may never see the results in our own lifetime, but one day we will. We'll be there in heaven with other believers, other people who come to know God because of our faithful witness and faithful service for him. When the last time we actually left the village of San Jeronimo, we didn't know at the time, actually, that this was the last time we would be there. I did have the opportunity to go back and to pack up some of our belongings and close up the house, but the rest of the family never went back to San Jeronimo. But as we were leaving the village, we were driving out in our Jeep early morning at daybreak. And our Marcus was about 10 years old at the time. And Marcus said to us, he said, "I've been reading Revelation." So it's not very easy to understand, is it? And we said, well, no, it's not. That's quite true. And he said, "Yes, but it says in there that when we get to heaven, there'll be people there from every language and every tribe and every nation." He said, "Is that true?" And we said, "Yes, it's true, because God says so." And he said, "Good, because that means there'll be somebody there from San Jeronimo." At the time, we didn't know of any believers. In fact, I don't think there were any believers in the town where we worked at the time we left. But now there is a church. There's a thriving, not just in San Jeronimo, but many of the other villages and towns round about. God has been working through the scriptures in their own language, through the faithful witness of Dan and Peggy Agee, who took over the project from us. and God has blessed his word and built his church and established his kingdom. We don't regret for even the tiniest little bit the fact that we worked in San Jeronimo for 4 years, invested 4 years of our time without seeing any results, because God had longer term plans. And it doesn't matter at all that somebody else took over and reaped the benefit and saw God blessing. And that needs to be our attitude for each one of us. God has given each one of us a part to play. It might not be clear to us what that part is or how God is going to use our witness in order to serve him, but we need to hold on by faith to the fact that God is faithful. He does have a plan, and he is going to complete the work that he started in us. Let me just mention that there are some literature on the table here at the back. I've also actually got Miss Swan's John's Gospel, if you're interested in taking a look at it. 25 years this took. And in some cases, it's still very long term, especially if you're in a situation where there's difficult access, political unrest, various factors that make it difficult. But even in those cases, God will accomplish his purposes. So let's hold on by faith and continue praying for God to complete the task that remains to be done. So thank you. Look forward to sharing again this evening. Oh, okay. I'm forgetting at this point. I'm carrying on and announcing the next hymn. Go forth and tell. Go forth and tell, O Church of God, awake. God's saving news to all the nations take. Proclaim Christ Jesus, Saviour, Lord, and King, that all the world his worthy praise may sing.